Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, I hope that you are enjoying your dinner, finishing up your desserts, and that you have enjoyed your conversations with all of the global citizens at your table. As I mentioned when we sat down, the World Affairs Council traditionally begins its fall speaker series with our Mexico program. The reasons are quite simple and very powerful. We are close neighbors, as I said, just 127 miles as the crow flies from San Antonio, Texas. We are important allies. We're partners in trade and other business ventures. We're financially interdependent, and we enjoy so many of the cultural gifts from Mexico right here in San Antonio. It's only logical and very important that we remain steadfast in our friendship and in our understanding of each other. Someone who is a real catalyst in this effort is Ronald Rodriguez. He was born in beautiful Tampico, the seaside city on the Gulf of Mexico, where Mexico's huge oil boom was focused in the early 1900s, and world famous now for its remarkable population of sea turtles. Okay. Raul is the former director of North American Development Bank, the former chair of the board of the World Affairs Council, and currently the Tom Benson Chair of Banking and Finance and the distinguished professor at the University of the Incarnate Word. He became a United States citizen this past spring, and he will serve as our moderator for what I promise will be a fascinating, fast-paced conversation with our very esteemed guest of honor. Ingeniero Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas is a former senator and governor of the state of Michoacán. He's a former mayor of Mexico City, a three-time presidential candidate, and a founding member of Mexico's PRD party. His father, Lázaro Cárdenas, was one of Mexico's most respected presidents, and in the spotlight again in 2012 as Mexico talks about various reforms to its energy field in the next year. Oil and gas, agriculture, trade, immigration and security, drug cartels, and the U.S. markets. Culture and the vast riches shared in the Gulf of Mexico. These are all issues that matter to each and every one of us in this room. Some of these are the focus of tonight's extraordinary program, Mexico, Post-Election Update. Please welcome our distinguished team of presenters.
Can you hear us back there? Yep. Just to make sure we are in sync here, this is not the presidential debate. Let me add a couple of bullet points, if I may, to the very kind introduction by Kathy. Mr. Cárdenas was the first mayor elected to in Mexico City in history, right? Which makes a difference. He wasn't appointed, he was elected to office. And I understand it had never happened in history, right?
No, it was the first time.
First time.
First time,
yes. And he's also been a visiting professor at Berkeley, Chicago, and coming up at Notre Dame.
Maybe.
Next year. Thank you so much, Mr. Cárdenas. Your visit is long overdue. We had a similar conversation 6 years ago, right before the Calderón election. In 2006, and I think it was fascinating in terms of the insight that you provided back then, and I'm sure it will be so this time around, right after the presidential election in Mexico. We'll be discussing politics, oil, and key things that I think are of great interest here in San Antonio for those of us who are either born in Mexico or tied to Mexico in so many different ways, be that history, demographics, business, et cetera, et cetera. You gave two speeches last year that I think were quite remarkable in summarizing how Mexico has evolved from a political standpoint since 1988 when you first ran for office, or actually since 1987 when you left the PRI, founded the Movimiento Democrático back then, and started a quest that has contributed tremendously to the evolution of democracy in Mexico. One was the speech as you were being awarded the highest recognition in the Mexican Senate, which is the Belisario Domínguez Award. And the other one was an award for distinguished public service by the University of Notre Dame. Could you summarize what you said back then? Because I think, again, it gives us a perfect sense as to how Mexico's evolved, the pluses and minuses of these 25 years, particularly in the political field.
Well, thank you. First, I want to thank the World Affairs Council and the Asociación de Empresarios Mexicanos de San Antonio for this invitation. It really honors me to be here with you all. Well, first, I would say that Mexico began a transition to a more democratic political system in 1987-1988. It was a hard struggle to begin changing things. We didn't have real elections before, 1997. In 1988, we had a major electoral fraud made by the government. Just to say something about this fraud, 45% of the voting sections of voting booths, the votes in 45% of those voting sections were not counted. They were invented. And, well, we didn't have an organization. We went through every legal possibility, but they were finally rejected by the authorities. And this is when I would say in Mexico started a change to a more democratic system, a change that could start by respecting the votes of the citizens. We are finally good after many different elections, local elections, federal elections in 1994, we finally could make the vote respected in 1997. 1997 was an intermediate election after a deep economic crisis in 1994-95, when our economic growth, we had a negative economic growth in 1995, about 5% of GDP. And this, forced the government to take measures to open our democratic system. It was in 1997, for the first time, that the opposition could have access to media. Before 1997, opposition from the right or opposition from the left didn't have real access to media. It was till 1997 when we could have access to media and where finally we could have the vote respected. And this is when the government had to make independent the electoral authority. The electoral authority did not depend anymore from the Ministry of the Interior, our Secretaría de Gobernación. And it was in that time when the ruling party, the official party, lost the absolute majority in our House of Representatives. And this was the first time the government was forced to open an election in Mexico City, the capital of the country. And this was the first time when the mayor of Mexico City was elected. So this is when I would say change in our political system really started. We have better elections since 1997. We have vote respected since then. And what we have now in Mexico, I'd say we have a very serious situation. We have a long period of very low economic growth. We had a negative economic growth in 2009 after the crisis that impacted us, the crisis that started here in 2008, and we had a negative growth in 2009, about almost 7% of economic growth, negative economic growth. We still have a very low economic growth. We have a very high unemployment. We have about 60 or two-thirds of the Mexican population in under the poverty line. We have a very unequal social condition. I would say that 1% of those households that receive the highest income get about 9.2% of GDP. And those households with the lowest income receive 0.07 of GDP. That's 131 times difference between the lowest and the highest income in households. But in parallel with this, we have an expanding violence all over the country. And this is what the during this present administration, about 100,000 people have been assassinated. In I would say hundreds of municipalities are under the control of organized crime. And this is the, I would say, the very serious situation the new government will find. We elected a new government in last July the 1st, and it will take office next December the 1st. So this is the very serious situation the government will find, and this is what we have now in Mexico, and, well, we are very concerned with this situation.
Tell us more about the comeback of the PRI, and I hesitate about calling it a comeback because even though they lost the presidential election in 2000 and 2006, they still had a stronghold in state governments and municipal mayors. So, but in any event, that relative comeback in terms of winning the presidency back, how do you explain that?
Well, I think that what we had in our July election was a rejection of the PAN, of the ruling party. About 70% of the votes were against the ruling party, against the PAN. 19 million votes were in favor of the PRI that won the presidency, and almost 16 million votes were in favor of the Progressive Coalition. The PAN, the ruling party, was in the presidential election in the third place. And I think this was a rejection against 12 years of a party that I would say most Mexicans consider that failed the expectations of many Mexicans that expected that with a change of the party at the head of the government in 2000, things would also improve in Mexico, social conditions, economic growth, etc. That would improve, and this didn't happen.
The PRD has ruled Mexico City for 15 years now, since you were elected.
97, yes.
Since 1997, so it's, mm-hmm. It's 15 years now. But that hasn't spread throughout Mexico. How do you see the future of the left? And you've been an observer and a direct participant in how the left has evolved worldwide. You were just telling us earlier today as the fact that As a very young man, you met Mao in China in the 1950s, and things like that, that again give you a tremendous perspective as how the left has evolved and throughout the world, and particularly in Latin America. What is happening in Mexico, and what are the prospects in that regard?
I think the left, Raul, well, there are several political parties in the left, or what we could consider the left in Mexico. Well, I think they have the responsibility of trying to strengthen their organization, trying to grow where votes have been low in different parts of the country, that they have to make better proposals so they can be attractive to the people, and they have to give the example also that they can we have several governments of the left right now. We had different states with governors from the PRD. In this last election, the PRD won for the third time the Mexico City.
By a huge margin.
By a very huge margin. 62% of the votes were in favor of the PRD candidate. And the other states were also won by this progressive coalition, mainly it's a PRD candidate. Mm-hmm. And I think that the main responsibility, the main commitment is that to really make a different government, give much more attention to social issues, give much more attention to the conditions of the people, and at the same time try to strengthen the organization of the parties in the left. And that always says I would see it as the main responsibility, not only of the PRD, but also of the other two parties that were part of this progressive coalition. They were small parties, but I think that's also their main responsibility.
Average Mexicans would say that, even if they disagreed with a specific political stance on your side, that you have become and you have been throughout these 25 years a highly respected voice in Mexican politics. I would quote Enrique Krause, who many of us know, a well-known historian in Mexico, and he is, I'd dare say, center-right. Enrique, writing about you, has says that your historical contributions to Mexican politics have been invaluable, and I quote, and that you are a key decent, and I quote, participant in Mexican politics. Some of us would love to see you in a Nixon in China kind of role. Particularly as we discuss an outlook having to do with the future of energy in Mexico, and more specifically with Pemex. Will you continue to play a role in Mexican politics having to do specifically with the reforms that are needed, the fiscal side, energy, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I've been involved in this issue for different matters, I would say. But I think that one of the most important reforms we have to make in Mexico is a major change in our oil policy or in our energy policy. But I would say mostly on our energy policy and our oil policy. The main problem we have, and this I would say is the position from different political positions, mm-hmm. is that Pemex has to be given budget and management autonomy. Pemex, our oil enterprise, state enterprise, is really managed or directed by our Department of the Treasury, by our Secretaría de Hacienda. And the main, in Pemex, is, or our oil industry, gives the main contribution to our fiscal resources. About 35% of fiscal resources are from oil industry. But this is not the problem. The problem is the way in which taxes are collected from Pemex. Pemex has a special tax system different from any other productive enterprise. So what we say, what we are demanding is that Pemex should be treated as any other productive business. In the case of Pemex, for example, the Department of the Treasury estimates what will be the ingresos, the revenues, the revenues of Pemex, and estimates to what amount will be the taxes. Taxes or royalties or anything. And they are collected at the beginning of the year. And this leaves Pemex without the possibility of investing in the different needs for expanding or the different activities of our oil industry, or even of giving a good maintenance to the oil industry installations. So what we are asking is that this be changed and Pemex be treated as any other productive industry. And it's usual that Pemex has resources in its treasury, has money in its treasury, but cannot invest. It's not allowed to invest. So what we say is that if Pemex were given this budget and management autonomy, Pemex could decide. Pemex should receive a mandate from the government, saying, "We want you to develop the oil industry in this way or that way," and Pemex should have to comply to that autorización, that mandato,
that mandate. Authorization, right?
And but. If it's necessary to build a new refinery or to expand the pipelines or to invest in exploration, this is authorized by the Department of the Treasury and not decided by the board of Pemex or by the CEO of Pemex. And this is what we think is should be the first step. There are several opinions in Mexico. The president-elect, for example, says Pemex should adopt a pattern as in its organization as Petrobras, the Brazilian enterprise, public enterprise, oil enterprise. That's right, but we think that the first step is to give this management and budget autonomy to Pemex, and if after that it's decided that Pemex becomes a public enterprise or a public enterprise with some private participation, this could be done. But the first step is to give this autonomy, whichever is the kind of organization that finally will be adopted by Pemex.
You're starting to sound like Lexington China. I might like that. So. Thank you. I think you would share the sense of urgency in this regard, because beyond the fiscal drain, there's issues in terms of corruption, there's issues in terms of inefficiency within Pemex, which obviously are showing up in terms of dwindling reserves, Chinguntepec, and Cantarell are clear issues, let alone subsidized gasoline imports, which are a huge issue in Mexico today. So again, there is a sense of urgency in this regard. But there's also change in the world. I mean, you have tremendous perspective here. You were almost born in Los Pinos, and the equivalent of the White House in Mexico. I mean, you were 6 months old, I guess, when you started to...
More,
you
yes.
moved to Los Pinos, right? So you have that perspective in terms of what Mexican history is, what it implies in terms of the political psyche in Mexico, what it implies in terms of resistance to reforms. But the fact of the matter is the world is changing very dramatically, and I think we can see it here in our backyard. I mean, actually, if you fly through Laredo to Nuevo Laredo, you can see, regardless of the fact that you see or not the river, you can see the dividing line by simply attesting to the fact that there's so much happening on this side in the oil business and so little on the other side of the border. It's like flying over Imperial Valley and crossing over to Mexicali. You see agriculture drawing the line. So technology is changing. Capital markets are changing. Trade balance is changing dramatically in the case of the U.S. as an importer of oil, et cetera, et cetera. So you would agree there's a sense of urgency here. There's a need for Pemex and the energy sector in Mexico to reform quickly.
To reform and to modernize.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, I think there's models out there. You mentioned Brazil. Norway is an interesting model mm-hmm. of Mexico, and I think, again, there's a lot of expertise in Mexico in terms of what that can provide.
Yes.
We'll leave you with a message here. We do want you to play a role there. quick word on security. You've mentioned this in your press interviews yesterday and today, and I think, again, you have a view in terms of a longer vision with regards to security than what most of us have in terms of the immediate concerns. What would that be?
Well, first I would say that this is a main concern in Mexico, from everybody and from different political positions, even from the people in government right now. I think that what this administration has been doing, it has been confronting organized crime with the army. I think that what has been done, I would say it's at least insufficient. I would at least say it's insufficient because organized crime has been fought or confronted as if it were an isolated phenomenon. Not related with any other sector, with any other aspect of social or economic or political life. And I think that the first thing is to understand that organized crime in Mexico and drug trafficking is not an autonomous phenomenon. It's related with international policies, with the situation that the most important market of drug trafficking is this country and not Mexico. Mexico is a country of transit in a large proportion, I would say, and that there are relations with the low economic growth, with unemployment, with poverty, that we need a much better intelligence, that we need a much better coordination with the United States and with the other countries, that we need a much better intelligence in regard to money laundering and with a patrimony that is clearly related with organized crime, that it's necessary to fight other I would say other crimes as kidnapping or extortion. With the same priority as is given to drug trafficking, so people doesn't resent this this kind of crimes. Normal people in its everyday life, and I think that this has to change. And the other thing is that it shouldn't be the army in charge of fighting drug trafficking, that we should create a special corps that in charge of this kind of confrontation against organized crime, with the right preparación,
capacity
with the communication system, with the
training,
with the communications, etc. But not the army. There should be a civil police corps with a civil command, and not the army. And this is also what has been or is being discussed. And I think that this is also the position of the incoming government. I'm not sure, not completely sure of that, but I think this is the position of the incoming government.
So there's a level of optimism in Mexico that I think you share in terms of...
I share, because I think that the situation is so serious in many, in several aspects, that the government has to do something different, different from what the present administration has been doing in regard to economic growth, in regard to the combat of drug trafficking, etc., so problems don't grow, don't complicate more what we already have.
We are going to have time, perhaps, for two or three questions before we adjourn. So I don't know. We have microphones? No. Well, it is. You do have. Okay, great. So if people could just walk to the microphones over here. In the meantime, let me appreciate Kathy Cook. For her leadership, and Barbara Schneider, as always, Eduardo Bravo from the Mexican Business Association, from the Asociación de Empresarios Mexicanos, Emilio España, Marcelo Sánchez, and the staff of the World Affairs Council and the Asociación de Empresarios Mexicanos for having made this possible. Let me just cap with one quick question, because it is pertinent to an event that the Asociación, with the support of the of different organizations, the Association with the North American Development Bank is planning for November, and this is the 20th anniversary celebration of the initialing of NAFTA, which is going to be a huge event here in town, very exciting. Your thoughts on NAFTA, and again, this coming from a town that has benefited tremendously from NAFTA, but your thoughts in terms of what it has meant, what has been missing, and what it should evolve into.
I think NAFTA has derived benefits for both countries. Mexican exports grew, I don't know, tripled or multiplied, I don't know how much since NAFTA became in force in 1994. But I would say that at the same time, the Mexican government didn't make its su tarea.
Its homework.
Its homework. Mm-hmm. Because when NAFTA was being negotiated in early 90s, 1991, 92, Mexico had to modernize its productive structures. And this didn't happen. The Mexican government didn't pay attention to agriculture, to small and medium industry, to other important industrial sectors like fertilizers or petrochemistry. And these are industrial or industries that are, in some cases, have almost disappeared or are in a permanent crisis. So what I think is that in the first place, Mexico has to implement an economic policy of growth, in the long term. And on the other hand, I think NAFTA, that has, as I said, derived benefits to Mexico, has given what it could give. I just would mention one thing. In 10 years before NAFTA became in force, about 83% of Mexican exports, or in Mexican exports, 83% corresponded to insumos.
Input.
To Mexican inputs.
Raw materials.
Raw materials, labor, services, etc. When NAFTA became in force, inputs had diminished to about 45%. And now they are maybe around 20%. And this means that Mexico hasn't paid attention to develop our internal possibilities in industries, in agriculture, in different areas of our economic activity. So what I think is that if we want to share benefits and have a much fairer relationship with the United States and Canada, we should have to think of two possibilities. One would be to make an addendum to NAFTA, in which other mechanisms should be created, like the investment funds that were created when Europe decided to integrate. So these funds could try to reduce or eliminate economic and social asymmetries in the three participant parties of Mexico, Canada, and the United States. Or the other possibility that we proposed from the PRD since 1991, when NAFTA was being negotiated, was to think not only of a free trade agreement between the three North American countries, but of a continental agreement of development, in which also this investment funds could be created to try to create more equal conditions of development in the different countries of our continent. I know this is maybe an ideal project, a project of a very long term, but I think that we should start thinking that this should be the kind of economic arrangement we could try to create and develop in all the Americas, and from Canada to Argentina and Chile.
Thank you. Brief question, please.
I just wanted to touch on the last topic, security. As Catherine said, 127 miles south of the border, this is something that we read about on a daily basis. The violence in Mexico, up to 35,000 deaths last year. And my question is, is increasing coordination and intelligence enough, or does there need to be a change in social policy this side of the border? This country tried prohibition, but people still wanted alcohol, so they created it. We have that problem today. We have cartels, the mafia, all of these municipalities in Mexico that are controlled as a trafficking means or production by these organizations. In the United States, we have the demand. If social policy were to change, do you feel that this would be alleviated, where we could control and tax a substance like we do with alcohol and tobacco?
No. Si un cambio de política social de este lado de la frontera, especialmente en términos de legalización, de ajustes al estilo de lo que ha pasado en alcohol, en esencia, legalización pudiera marcar una diferencia.
Well, I don't know if legalizing drugs in this would be the right measure. I think that This has been discussed, this has been proposed by several, I would say, past presidents like Zedillo in Mexico, or Cardoso in Brazil, or Gaviria in Colombia, in different occasions, but they didn't do it when they were in office. So I don't know. This has been this. It's. I would say this is not a major issue, not a major issue in debate in Mexico. But this has, it, this is being proposed from different political positions. Yeah. But I think that this could maybe give some. Good or positive results if this were also a measure adopted in the United States, not only in Mexico or not only in Latin American countries.
Yeah, I agree. It hasn't been discussed much in the United States, and we probably won't hear it much in the next three presidential debates. But the reality is, since the Reagan administration, we've wasted over $1 trillion on this drug war, which has accomplished very little. So I think maybe a change in social policy, a shift there, might be advantageous to both of our countries, south and north of the border. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. In 1996, you were very close to winning the election. If I remember correctly, it was only about half a percentage point, and you would have beat Calderon. What do you think, if you would have done something differently, that you would have won the election?
You mean 1988?
1996, if I remember correctly. Oh, I mean, 6 years ago.
He was not a candidate.
Sorry?
He was not a candidate 6 years ago. 12 years ago.
I'm sorry?
I was a candidate in 88, in 94, and in 2000.
Okay, well, then I'm sorry.
Well,
I'm asking.
I have to say that I think things would be better if I had won. But. But it's
Mr. Frost.
Ingeniero, you have before you a group of people here who have worked long and hard for many years to improve our relationships here in San Antonio with Mexico and particularly with Mexicans. I wonder if you could tell us what, in your mind, we in San Antonio might be doing in working with Mexico to engender more effort of working for things that would be of benefit to us and to you, to the Mexicans. What would you recommend we do?
I think that it would be very, very important to. I think that one of the main problems Mexico and the United States have and share is migration, and I think that it should be very important to try to I wouldn't say convince, but try to inform the people here in the United States of the very important contribution migration gives to this country. And that this should be understood and accepted by the United States society and the United States government. Migrants from, I would say, all over the world, Mexicans in a large proportion, give a very important contribution to this country. They're working very different activities. They're giving their imagination, their talent, their work in many different aspects. We find the presence of cultures from different parts of the world in common life here in the United States since some years ago. And I think that it's very important that people here recognize the very important contribution migrants are giving to the economy, to culture, and I would say to social life here in the United States in general. And I know that you and organizations here represented can give a very very important contributions in your daily activities to make this recognized, I would say, both by U.S. society and by the United States government.
Thank you.
I dare say that there is no friendlier city towards Mexico in the United States than San Antonio. Mr. Cárdenas. You are always welcome here. We resent the fact that it's been 6 years. So we trust you will find an occasion to visit us quite more frequently than that.
Thank you, Raúl.
And we look forward to your continued leadership in building democracy in Mexico and to open up the different fields where Mexico needs to make progress, as in the case of the oil business and energy in general. So thank you so much for your leadership, for your presence here, and thank you all.
Thanks to you all.
Thank you, Raúl.
Thank you all so much for being here. Another thank you to Eduardo Bravo, to Raúl, Ingeniero Cárdenas. Thank you so much. Mil gracias a todos. Buenas noches. Good night.